Blog Talk Radio.
You get into a mindset that as you have planned out what you're going to invest, that money is no longer spending money. That's just part of your, almost part of your job. You know, when you make a plan and you say, you know, I'm going to invest X amount of money, or maybe even if you pay off debt, I'm going to pay off this month's much amount of money. That money you should no longer consider yours. It's part of your business plan.
Welcome and thanks for tuning in to the Midday Money Show, your weekly shot of uncommon financial good sense. I'm Tony Husbands, a financial coach with the Debt Free Divas, and I love to talk about all things that relate to your money. This week, I'm reaching back again into the archives to bring a show that I thought I'd shared with you all recently, but it turns out I've been hiding this gem. My interview with Martin Van Leer occurred around the time that he released his book, Million in 10, and the book was about his journey to save $1 million in 10 years. It actually took him 13, but who's counting? Well, Martin's fascination with the idea of saving $1 million started after an offhand conversation with a coworker who wasn't worried about being laid off because he had $300,000 in the bank anyway. You have that kind of loot hanging around. Who cares about losing your job, right? Well, Martin wanted that kind of attitude, and so he set off on a journey of his own with his wife in tow to see if they could, in fact, pad their retirement nest egg by $1 million in 10 years. So our conversation really kind of delves into the steps that Martin actually took. And the good thing about it is Martin is not a financial professional. I definitely want to make that disclosure. He's largely self-taught. He didn't use the services of a financial planner. He learned what he knows about investing all on his own. And that's encouraging because for the rest of us who are just getting started in this game of investing and growing our wealth, Martin's story should give you some hope, especially if you feel like you're a little behind schedule. We can do this, Team Debt Free. The information provided here is for educational purposes only. Make sure you consult a licensed professional for information on your specific situation. All resources mentioned in today's episode will be available on my website. Just look for the show notes for how to have a $300,000 in the bank attitude. Head over to my website, debtfreedivas.org.
Thanks, Martin, for joining us on the Midday Money Show.
Thank you for having me.
So before we get started, you're from a small town in the Netherlands. Where exactly are you from?
I'm from a southern town in the Netherlands called Helmond. And oddly enough, that translates literally to the mouth of hell.
really?
It's quite a nice town, but I did make it out. But I grew up there all my life, middle-class family, and only came to the United States in 1997,
okay,
after I graduated college. Yeah.
So what's the biggest difference, would you say, between your hometown and where you live currently in Milwaukee? It's probably very different, huh?
Actually, it's kind of ironic. Milwaukee is almost the parallel city to Helmond. Helmond
really?
Was a neighbor city to Eindhoven, which is where Philips, the electronics giant, comes from. So like Milwaukee is to Chicago, that's where my hometown was, to another big city in the Netherlands. But beyond that, the culture is not that much different, other than America is, you know, so much more spacious and in my opinion has a lot more opportunity to offer than back over in the Netherlands.
But, yep. Do you get home very often? Do you get to visit home?
Not too often. It's gotten quite expensive, but we did actually go a month ago to see my parents, and I have two young children, so they got to see their grandparents, which is very nice, both for them and for my grandparents.
Yeah. Very cool.
I wish it could be more often, but it's gotten prohibitively expensive too.
Well, you, I would say, are my first interviewee from the Netherlands, so I appreciate that. This is a new opportunity for me. Okay, so let's talk about your plan. You came up with this game plan in 2000 to become a millionaire in 10 years, and you hit that goal. It took you 13 years, but that's still pretty impressive. So what inspired the original plan?
It kind of plays back into the Netherlands. When I came to the United States, one of the things that does strike you is that unlike in Europe, there is not really much of a social catch net here. And I'm talking about not just retirement, but also things like insurance, which is slightly different here in the U.S. So I was somewhat financially worried about not having enough, but having something that should something bad happen to the family. If there was a bad illness or something like that, I wanted to be prepared for that because I definitely have seen around me that, you know, if you don't prepare for that, it can not end well. So that was kind of the motivation for what I did. But I was actually inspired by something that a colleague of mine said just out of the blue one day at work. We were having a bad day, and he said something in the kind of like, you know, I have $360,000. I don't care if they fire me. And you know, that's an odd statement, but to me, that was kind of like, wow, that must feel kind of good. So that was kind of, for me, the trigger that said, like, you know, hey, wouldn't it be nice, you know, if we did something similar and, you know, not $360,000, but aim higher. And so that's kind of where I got serious about the plan to do something with our finances.
So when you brought this, so at the time you were married, you were actually probably quite newly married. So at the time when you brought this to your wife, what was her reaction?
She was all in. Luckily for us, it really didn't mean that much sacrifice. You know, I have to say that we were, you know, I was happily employed, and at the time my wife was working too. So we had money left at the end of the month, and so it was kind of like, well, let's do a good thing with this money. So she was okay with the plan. She's not so openly. She doesn't talk openly about money as I do. But beyond that, you know, she, you know. Well, and let me first premise that I couldn't have done it without her to start with, because it definitely takes a team. But luckily, both my wife and I really never had any expensive needs or desires for expensive cars. So it's you know, it kind of just went along as it went.
Okay.
It wasn't a real you know, change in our life to say, like, oh, now we're going to do this. That it was kind of like, oh, well, it makes sense to do this.
But why 10 years? What made you kind of settle on that? Is it just that it was like a round number? It seemed
reasonable? Yes. So, and both, actually. Both the million and the 10 years, is really, those are random numbers. I think when you want to take control of your finances, I think it's very important that you set yourself a goal and a plan so that you have something to aim for. Now, $1 million is pretty much a random number. And the 10 years, as I was making a plan, and I'm a total spreadsheet geek, so I worked out basically if I save this much per month and we're going to get this much return on our investments, then, you know, I should be able to do this within 10 years. And that's kind of where those two numbers came from. But I think for anybody to create a financial plan, they need to pick the numbers that suit their needs. And it doesn't have to be 10 years. If you are perfectly happy working until you're 65, then you can spread it out. You can aim for a bigger number, or you can, you know, save less a month at a time. It's really just, you know, you have to set yourself a goal and a timeline, and then you can work towards that. If you don't, then you kind of lose track, I think, of things, and it might just get lost.
So let me ask you this then. In your plan, did you, once you were successful when you were originally kind of working this out, both you and your wife were working, in your plan, did you, I guess, expect to leave your full-time jobs at the end of this process, or is it just this is what you wanted to achieve within 10 years and then you'd work on the next major milestone?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. Not really my plan to quit my job, even though I did, but it's exactly like you said, that was just the first, you know, goal to build a nice nest egg. I'm going to be working on the next plan, which would basically be become financial freedom, because sadly enough, $1 million is not enough for everybody anymore to retire. And unfortunately, well, I shouldn't say unfortunately, I'm pretty happy, but that the same goes for us. Right now, $1 million would make for a very meager retirement. So, you know, I quit my job really at the time because I was kind of burnt out on the work I was doing. And so I needed a break. And I also kind of wanted to write a book about all of this. So that's what I did. I took a break. I wrote a book, started a blog. But I personally, I don't call myself retired yet.
Gotcha. Because you're still pretty young. You're in your 40s.
I am 44, yeah. And it's kind of, yes. So,
still very young. I'm in my 40s,
yeah.
So I'm going with that.
we're super, super young, yeah.
Right. Okay, so, well, congratulations on that. And that's, I like that you just kind of, even if it was just like a round number to you, a random thing, I like that you maybe, you know, drew a line in the sand and said, this is what we're going to achieve. You know, you and your wife were working together. So let's talk about that process then. What was kind of the first thing you needed to do to get the ball rolling?
The first thing that we did was really work out like the plan. And like I said, you know, I came up with a quite comprehensive spreadsheet where I would basically figure out we need to save certain money, we need to invest it, and then at the time we were dealing with, you know, our 401ks and our stock accounts. And so in the beginning I was maxing out my 401k. Mm-hmm. I've kind of come back from that, and in the last couple of years I did not max it out anymore, but I do like the 401k because of the corporate matching.
Mm-hmm.
But we came up with the plan. They said, like, you know, we're going to try to save X amount of money per month. And in our case, at the time, based on our income, it was around $2,500 a month, which
mm-hmm.
is quite a bit of money.
Mm-hmm.
As the years have gone on, my salary, of course, has increased, and so that number went up. So that was creating the plan in a spreadsheet, and then kind of keeping an eye on, you know, living below our means. But fortunately for us, that was never really a problem. Like, we didn't budget in the beginning, and we didn't need to budget because money was just left
mm-hmm.
at the end of the month.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, consistently setting that money aside. And what it kind of takes is you get into a mindset that as you have planned out what you're going to invest, that money is no longer spending money. That's just part of your, almost part of your job. You know, when you make a plan and you say, you know, I'm going to invest X amount of money, or maybe even if you pay off debt, I'm going to pay off this month's much amount of money, that money you should no longer consider yours. It's part of your business plan.
Right,
right. It's an investment in your business, and so you don't feel the need, or you don't feel like at the end of the month, oh, you know, look how much is in my account, I'm going to, you know, buy a jet ski or something. It's like, no, that money is simply targeted for that plan.
Well, let me ask you, did you ever feel or get tempted to maybe slow down? Because if you're putting away $2,500 a month, you're amassing a pretty decent size savings. And I don't know if everything was everything going into your 401k, because that's a little bit different because you don't have access to it.
So the 401k, in the beginning I maxed it out, and at the time that was around $15,000. But
mm-hmm.
I would invest about $30,000 to $40,000 in the stock market, and that's where it went immediately. So every month I would basically dollar averaging. I would send the money to the stock account, and I would buy the stock. And at that point, I didn't consider it money anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that takes a bit of a mindset to kind of disassociate yourself with that money. It's basically, okay, well, there it is in the stock account, and it's doing its work. But as far as temptation goes, absolutely. You know, as you get further in planning, at one point, not too many years ago, I had $800,000, and it's like, you know, wow, that feels pretty good. Do I really need to keep going and need
right.
more and more? So the temptation has been there to, like, buy something nice, but
how do you stay focused to complete that? How did you stay focused, I guess, to complete that goal? Especially when you're like, yeah, I could blow off. I can, you know, go travel, go see my parents, you know.
Just discipline, I think. It's just patience and discipline and kind of not fall into that temptation of taking money out, because it is – and, you know, we did take money out at some occasions, but that was – you know, for good reasons, where, you know, we bought a home and, you know, I wanted to do a 20% down payment. So that's where we dipped into the money that was invested. But again, it was not, you know, for leisure. It was basically for basic needs. So we dipped a couple of times, but never, severely.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, yeah, you have to kind of keep that discipline.
So your background is in IT, but you are investing, I guess, primarily in the stock market, whether it be your retirement accounts or personal. What type of education, I guess, if you will, or what type of resources did you seek out to improve your education or make yourself more comfortable with the idea of being able to invest on your own?
Well, the good news is that it doesn't have to be difficult, but I had to kind of learn that the hard way. I really didn't educate myself that much, and I'll need to go back a couple of years, but I started investing in 1997 when I came here. And 1997, and I was in IT, you remember the internet boom. I was right in the middle of that. And so we, myself and some colleagues were investing at the time just for kind of the fun of it. And it was just crazy because, you know, you bought a stock in the morning and you sold it at night and you had 20% profit. So that was kind of my introduction to the stock market. So I simply opened an Ameritrade account at the time, and it was all fairly self-explanatory. But we were not educated, so we were just basically going with the flow. And unfortunately, you know, when 2000 came around and the whole internet boom crashed, all of that money went with it, including my, my 401k, because I was in a similar company like Enron, where you had your entire set of money in one nest egg, which is basically the corporate stock. So I, at the time, lost over $200,000, which was pretty much my entire 401k. But that was my introduction to stock investing. And then after 2000, I kind of slowly got back into it. Well, not slowly really, but I stayed mostly in ETF, exchange traded funds, like the SPDR, SPY, and the ETF like the DIA, which then they track the indexes, like the S&P 500 or the Dow Jones. And those really, you know, there's not a lot of education needed for those. You just buy them and you kind of go with the flow. On the side, I did, you know, keep investing for the first 5 years in some, like, you know, smaller ventures, but they tend to not go very well. The stock market, if you try to really time or try to play the stock market, I would not advise that, because it's just it's that actually really is a gamble, and I've lost quite a bit of money.
I see. Yeah.
In stock ventures. So the easiest way, and that's where I live by now, is the, you know, the KISS simple, keep it simple and stupid. As I, my money is solely, or for 99%, in SPDR and the NASDAQ and the Dow Jones tracking funds.
Just so we can be clear, I want to just kind of maybe go into a little bit of a definition of that. You said when you're investing mostly in SPDR or Dow Jones or NASDAQ, what you're saying is you're investing in well-known, almost boring companies.
Yeah, yeah, they're exchange traded funds. So the price of an exchange traded fund basically tracks that SPDR. So if the S&P 500 goes up 10 points, then the SPDR stock, the SPY stock, goes up 10 cents. So they literally track each other. As the market goes, so goes your stock that you buy in those exchange traded funds. So it is very simple investing.
Right.
There is somewhat of a diversification in there. I wouldn't say it's full diversification, but because it's all still in the stock market. But my philosophy there is kind of that the stock market in the long run will go up, and so will these indices. You just have to be able to weather the ups and downs. And
now, were you working with a financial planner at all through this, or are you all kind of self-educated?
No, I was totally self-educated.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that's but again, I don't feel that bad about it with the S&P 500 tracking funds. There's a, you know, a little dirty secret that out of all the money managers that are out there, and there's thousands of them, less than half cannot beat the S&P 500. So, and those people come with you know, fee that you have to pay them.
Right.
Exactly. So I'm what you call a Boglehead, which is John C. Bogle, who founded Vanguard, is one that, you know, basically prophesizes that, you know, only invest in exchange traded funds. Don't try to, you know, beat the market. Don't try to time the market, and don't buy any sophisticated mutual funds, because in most cases you can do it better yourself.
Interesting. Okay, so let me ask you this. I'm trying to get to a point where sometimes your risk level or your risk tolerance might be very, you know, very different from somebody else, because you said in kind of a one breath without blinking, I lost $200,000 to somebody else. that might make them, like, you know, faint. even though you made it, you know, over 10 years, you've made it back, you know, well over, you know, times. And so, but let me ask you this then. So it definitely sounds like you have a higher risk tolerance for investing. if somebody is new to the idea of investing or, you know, purchasing stocks or, you know, even mutual funds or whatever, if that's their thing, what's one resource that you would point them to that you think somebody that's new to this or just trying to get started with this should look at?
Well, if it's in mutual funds, and chances are that you would be working with your 401k, I would definitely talk to your HR person and see if they can hook you up with your plan manager.
Mm-hmm.
But again, they might have some interest different
right.
than yours.
Right.
But if you're really new to it, first of all, I would recommend start small. So what I was doing was, you know, fairly large amounts of money, but it's a well-known secret that if you invest $300 a month, you can be a millionaire by the time you're 65 as well. So it doesn't have to be that much. But if you go with a financial advisor, then I would recommend going with a fee-based financial advisor.
What is that? Fee-based.
Okay. Yeah. So when you talk to a financial advisor, just, you know, pay them a flat fee as opposed to, you know, giving them a percentage of your returns or and also try to find a financial advisor that has fiduciary, which means that they have to work in your interest. They will not be able to sell you any products of any sort. And you can work with a financial advisor. Because that definitely, I am not a financial advisor. If you do want to get into the stock market, it's always wise to, you know, talk to a financial advisor first.
Okay.
But whether that's a short-term relationship, whether you want to have that managed by somebody, that's all totally up to each individual. Just know that if you have somebody manage it, then, of course, there's going to be some money going away from your portfolio.
Gotcha. So on your blog, and you blog about your experience of getting to $1 million in 10 years, and I will definitely post links in the show notes to Martin's blog so you guys can get there. But when people come to your blog, what should they expect when they visit your blog?
It's a mix of, like you said, my experiences that I've gathered on the way to becoming a millionaire. So I write about the budgeting, and because actually we started budgeting later in the plan, like in the last 2 years of the plan, we started budgeting to kind of prepare for the actual eventual retirement at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But there have been a lot of measures that we've taken to where we are, and a lot of it was savings in the later years. So we managed to save about $20,000 from our annual. You know, we thought we were living below our means, and then when we started budgeting, we actually figured out, wait a minute, you know, we can get even $20,000 lower. So there's savings articles, there's articles about career moves. So I write about, you know, me quitting my job and how you should probably approach it if you plan it. So you'll find those types of articles and simple articles about, like, how you can save money on your utilities. And because I've worked those out both on the blog and in my book, that, you know, exactly how we came to a savings of approximately like $22,000 a year on our budget. And not everything might apply to you, but something might apply. And then what I'm also going to be writing about is, like we talked about earlier, I'm not working right now other than on the blog, but I'm going into the next phase of my plan, which is, you know, financial freedom. And that's where I'm going to be writing about, you know, what that plan is going to look like, and hopefully give you a, you know, update as to how that progresses, which means going back to work, but also coming up with a whole new plan. But what I really like for people to take away visiting my blog is that, you know, I was a salaried employee. I came up with a goal and a plan, but I actually made it to a millionaire. And, you know, sometimes we hear that the American dream is dead. And I hate to say that for a lot of people, it's very hard nowadays, but it's, you know, it's still achievable. It's not just the money managers. It's not just the TV personalities that make a lot of money. We can still do it. It's just, you know, it's got to take a plan, some discipline, and a good approach to that. So maybe like that guy that inspired me, you know, 10 years ago by saying, look, I don't care if I get fired, maybe somebody will walk away from the walk and say, like, hey, I can do this too.
That's awesome. That is so awesome. And I think we're going to leave it there. That's a great way to end this. But before we get out of here, though, I just do want to make sure that everybody knows, in addition to your blog, million10.com, are there any other places online where you like to hang out, where if people have questions, they can get in touch with you?
The blog is millionin10.com. My Twitter account is the same as millionin10. I can also be found on Facebook. Again, Facebook, millionin10.
Coolness. And exactly, just like that guy inspired you. I think we're going to be inspiring other people today, because I know I'm inspired. So so let's do this, folks. Okay. Well, thanks, Martin, so much for your time. And we'll have to have you back on maybe, once I get a chance to look at your book, we can have you back on and talk more about that in more detail. Okay?
Oh, absolutely. I would love that. Thank you.
Actually, turns out that was my very first FIRE, Financial Independence, Retire Early interview, and it's right in line with where we are today. Again, we're paying off debt, making ourselves available to options when we can do more with the disposable cash that we have rather than just pay bills every month, because I know that you were not sent here to go to work just to pay your credit card bills every month. Let's get ourselves in a better financial position so that we can answer whatever the call is on our life. And if you need a little help getting to that point, I definitely want to invite you to join my Transform Your Money Accountability Group. The groups are working. We're paying off debt. We're increasing our savings, and we're encouraging one another. If you want in on this action, head over to debtfreedivas.org/transform, and we'll get you connected. Until we talk again, folks, have a great money week.